I next met with Dr. Antonio Palumbo to chat about multiple myeloma. And to begin, Dr. Palumbo commented on the concept he's published on extensively, management of the so-called, quote, very elderly patient, i.e. over age 75.
This is a very important issue because, generally speaking, patients over the age of 75 do represent 30% of the total myeloma population. And we never address really trials and studies to face the efficacy and the toxicity in this patient population. This is something we are going to do in the future, but at present, what we can say is that we should immediately recognize patients over the age of 75. And in those patients, around a 50% dose reduction should be adapted, because if we, for example, consider a full dose of thalidomide, 200 milligrams at 65 years of age, we should go down to 100 or 50 over the age of 75. If we do consider bortezomib twice weekly for a patient at the age of 65, we should immediately go at the once weekly infusion for patient over the age of 75. And similarly, for lenalidomide, if you start at the dose of 25 milligrams, should we immediately go to a 50% dose reduction the moment you start to have some hematological toxicity.
Can I just ask, do you think that most investigators do that and believe that?
Not yet, but I can tell you that in the future, we already have the trials giving different doses to patients according to age. So the ongoing trials for elderly patients are already designed with different doses of therapy according to age.
What about dexamethasone?
The same story. The dexamethasone, if could be given for 8 courses per month in a younger patient, certainly should go down to 4 courses in a fit 65 years of age patient and should go down to 20 milligrams 4 times over the age of 75.
What about selection of initial systemic therapy in these patients?
If you're looking about the induction therapy, I don't think today we could say that one regimen is appropriate for a younger patient, the other one is appropriate for a more elderly patient. We do have today basically two standards of care. One is MPT, MP plus thalidomide, the other one is MP plus Velcade. The differentiation of treatment is mainly given by the toxicity profile. So for Velcade, if you have peripheral neuropathy, you don't like it. You prefer lenalidomide that is rid of peripheral neuropathy. If you have an issue for thromboembolism, you might prefer bortezomib that doesn't give thromboembolism. So the choice is mainly related to the safety profile of the drug and, of course, to other considerations, such as if someone is living far away from the hospital, the oral administration is better than intravenous. But I think this is the differentiations.
What about cytogenetics in these people?
This is another important issue. Generally speaking, there is a treatment paradigm who says that high-risk patients should receive bortezomib, standard-risk patients should receive IMiDs. Generally speaking, probably in the future, this paradigm will lose some of the today importance. So my point is that at present, I do not see a treatment changing according to prognosis. I do see treatment given mainly according to the safety profile of the combination.
What about MPR lenalidomide?
Well, NPR lenalidomide is going to become the second generation MPT because lenalidomide, by definition, is a drug that is a little bit more effective than thalidomide and with a better safety profile of, again, thalidomide. So lenalidomide increases the efficacy of thalidomide and improves the toxicity of thalidomide.
You said is going to become, so it's not now?
It's not now yet. Well, I'm reasoning from a European point of view. From a European point of view, you need the approval of the authorities before saying a treatment is becoming a standard of care. From a scientific point of view, certainly is already a standard of care because it has been shown superior to NP. So from this point of view, this is another treatment option. And the comment I would make on this combination is that what is very, very important from this combination is the maintenance approach, as it is, generally speaking, for the IMiDs, because Talidex is a treatment until progression, Lendex is a treatment until progression, and at the same time, NPR needs continuous treatment with lenalidomide until progression. The weakness of the NPR at present is that an alkylating agent plus len increase the hematologic toxicity, and therefore we need to find a dose reduction, a better scheduling of the NPR combination to improve the hematologic toxicity of this combination.
What about maintenance in the patient who's getting, for example, VMP in that setting? And what are your thoughts about longer-term therapy in these patients?
At present, there are two treatment paradigms. With the bortezomib paradigm, the treatment is 8 to 9 courses and stop it. Then wait the relapse and eventually rechallenge. In the lenalidomide paradigm, has been RD at relapse, is now for NPR plus LEN, is a continuous treatment until progression. And just coming back to the session that just closed a few minutes ago, we have some unprecedented data presented both by the French and the CLGB groups for maintenance after autologous transplant. In those patients has been clearly shown that the use of lenalidomide as maintenance after autologous transplant is reducing of 50% the risk of progression. And this data is exactly the same in both studies. So we have two studies showing the same data. And more important than this, has been clearly shown that maintenance should be used in all patients, not only in patients with partial response, because the advantage is important for CR patient, VGPR patient, and PR patient. So independently from the response after autologous transplant, the use of maintenance after transplant significantly improve remission duration in all patients.
What about the issue of adding bortezomib post-transplant in patients with high-risk cytogenetics?
I think this is wise because, generally speaking, the comment should be that high-risk patients are doing poorly, doesn't matter which is the drug you are using. But certainly, bortezomib might help to overcome the bad prognosis of those patients. So certainly, the use of bortezomib is indicated in patients with deletion 17, translocation 414, or translocation 1416.
You mentioned that the paradigm for VD is stop and retreat. What about an IMiD, specifically lenalidomide after VD as maintenance or early second line or whatever you might call it?
Well, we do not have data to show if a rechallenge is possible. By definition, if a patient is progressive under lenalidomide treatment, there is no much choice of rechallenge. What we can do, on the other hand, is that a patient under treatment, for example, with lenalidomide at 10 milligrams, who starts to have an increase in M component, you might increase the dose of len from 10 milligrams to 25, and this is a way to recapture the disease and return in a remission duration. Second, if you have a patient in maintenance who has the M component that is increasing, at that point you might even add a third drug such as cyclophosphamide, and this is again a way to recapture remission in patient who has an increase in M component.
But for the patient who's receiving VD as induction therapy, you say the standard is to stop after a defined number of cycles, wait for progression, and then retreat. But what about using, for example, lenalidomide after stopping the VD?
This is certainly an option, and we will see it more and more, this option. The paradigm could be, in this setting, the use of Velcade as induction, and then the use of lenalidomide as maintenance. So instead of putting the two drugs together as in the VRD combo, you use an induction with VD followed by a maintenance with lenalidomide. Certainly, to some extent, personally, I believe one of the best way to treat and one of the best way to use both bortezomib and lenalidomide.
So you do that in older patients yourself?
Yes, we do lenalidomide after Velcade induction.
And what data do we have on that?
Unfortunately, at present, not many. We have some phase 2 studies, mainly in the transplant setting, showing that if you give a Velcade induction, then you stop and give lenalidomide as maintenance, you further increase the response and improve the remission duration. We will have many data in this setting in the younger patient receiving autologous transplant. Unfortunately, at present, very limited data in the elderly setting.
Getting back to the over 75-year-old patient, what are your thoughts in terms of age as it relates to being a candidate for transplantation, assuming the patient has no serious comorbidities, very proactive attitude, and in great health? Is there an age at which you will not do transplant? And I don't know, there might be some regulatory or financial issues too, but what about clinically?
From a clinical point of view, the data are saying, Barlogi showed that for patients over the age of 65, autologous transplant is less effective than for patients younger than 65. So 65 is a cutoff for the usual MEL-200 approach for autologous transplant. Then has been shown in another randomized trial that up to the age of 70, reduced intensity autologous transplant with a melphalan of 100 milligrams is superior to conventional treatment. So there is a gray zone between 65 and 70 where autologous transplant at reduced intensity can be used. Over the age up between 70 and 75 seems that even the reduced intensity transplant cannot give a major advantage.
So our CME group is about to submit an abstract to ASH focused on patients over age 75 based on more than 200 patients treated in a community-based setting. And what we saw there was that in spite of the fact that patients received less aggressive induction therapy, the response rate seemed about the same as in younger patients. How does that jive with your experience?
The response is similar, although today, the response under the age of 75 is equal for patients over the age of 75. But there is a problem. The problem is that there is too much discontinuation. So what is really happening is that when there is too much toxicity, you discontinue too early. And from this point of view, you even lose some of the efficacy.
But what about in your own hands? I'm assuming that you try to do dose adjustments and continue therapy. When you do that, do you think that you can get responses that are in the same ballpark of what you see?
Absolutely, yes. What we do, I'll tell you what we do. This could be interesting. We basically define the treatment according to age, and we change the treatment in patient over the age of 75. But if we have a patient younger than 75 with comorbidities affecting lung, heart, liver, and kidney, at that point, even a patient younger than 75 is considered over the age of 75. For patients over the age of 75 and around the 50% dose reduction, we use it to lower the toxicity and to be able to keep patient on treatment. Otherwise, discontinuation occurs too early. And then we use also another, we believe, golden rule. If an acute toxicity occurs, we immediately stop the drug. We wait to recover to grade 1 toxicity. When we are back to grade 1 toxicity, we resume treatment, but with a lower dose. So this is a way to tailor dose intensity according to the tolerability of that given person.
And to what extent do you think you compromise response by starting out at the lower dose?
The issue is, if you are able to keep the patient on treatment, at the end of the day, the cumulative dose is the same. Because between giving 10 in 2 months or 10 in 6 months, the cumulative dose is the same and the efficacy is the same.
You mentioned earlier the issue of scheduling of bortezomib, and my eyes really got open last year at ASCO with your presentation, and then there was more data at ASH. Can you just kind of go back through what we know about the issue of neuropathy and scheduling of bortezomib and how it's affected both non-protocol care and the design of studies?
Well, I would say that, first of all, the change of schedule should be only for patients over the age of 65. Twice weekly is still the standard in patients younger than 65. For patients older than 65, the weekly, I think, is becoming the standard because there is no question that the peripheral neuropathy is reducing from 15 to 3%, so it is 5 times less in terms of peripheral neuropathy. There is also clear now with data that there is no lack of efficacy because in terms of progression-free survival, there is no difference between twice and once weekly infusion. So now it's clear that moving to the once weekly, there is no lack of efficacy, provided this is done within the VMP schedule, because there are very limited data for example, combination including Velcade plus dexamethasone alone. So for those combination, I would wait a little bit to see more robust data. Another very important issue is to change the way of managing toxicity. What we say to patients, first of all, patient must be informed that this is essential, because without patient information, a worsen of a symptom might take 2 to 3 weeks to reach the attention of a physician. If the patient is informed, he will immediately make an alert in 1 to 2 days, and this might change dramatically the opportunity to have a reversibility of the symptoms. Then the second major issue is, if you have a severe peripheral neuropathy, stop it, wait again to come back to a tingling situation, to a grade 1, and at that point restart, but restart with a 50% dose reduction in the bortezomib dose. So from twice to weekly, we go even from weekly to twice monthly. So we are very, very strict in reducing the dose.
What about the prevention or treatment of the neuropathy with agents, creams? I've heard all kinds of things. Is there anything that's of any value, anything that you use?
We do not use any additional agent. Those agents have a probability of around 10% to be effective. What is effective in reducing peripheral neuropathy is A, prompt action, B, a 50% dose reduction in the dose of the drug.
How do you determine whether to hold the drug or do you ever just decrease the dose? Is it simply the level of symptomatology? Is it the speed with which it develops, or is it just the level of symptomatology?
No, what we do in our clinic, we say, first of all, inform the patient, because the patient can give alert in one day. Second, we do accept tingling. Everything more than tingling for us is a good reason to stop.
More than tingling being pain?
Absolutely. So we do accept basically grade 1 sensory peripheral neuropathy, everything more than that, starting from pain, moving to motor peripheral neuropathy, moving to autonomous neuropathy. These are all stopping rules for us. And then if we go back to a grade 1 sensory peripheral neuropathy, at that point we restart, but with a 50% dose reduction.
Now, with this type of meticulous care, helping with the patient education, how often do you see it go beyond grade 1?
Now we are going behind grade 1. The incidence is 20-22%. So we basically, to give you some numbers, any grade peripheral neuropathy was around 50-60% in the twice weekly, goes down to 20-22% any grade, and a grade 3-4 was 15%, goes down to 3.
Can you talk about the data you first presented at the ASH meeting looking at MPR followed by lenalidomide maintenance?
Well, we presented this combination including MPR followed by R maintenance that is clear superior to MP alone with a more than 50% reduced risk of progression. Which are the issues coming from this combination? First, that maintenance is essential because if you look at the efficacy of the maintenance, this is giving over 70% reduced risk of progression. So this was probably the first trial showing how much maintenance is important in the lenalidomide setting. Then concerning MPR, MPR is increasing the response rate because the CR rate goes up to 15% versus the 3% of MP, so is increasing significantly the CR rate and also the speed of response. That is quite important because speed of response means time required to get rid of pain. And this is not a secondary issue because if I need 6 months to get rid of my pain, or if I need 1 month to get rid of my pain, this from my quality of life may change significantly. So MPR was increasing response, speed of response, still have a high risk of neutropenia that is over 50%. And from this point of view, a fine-tuning of the schedule, a refining of the dosing, probably a reducing the dosing of melphalan is something should be investigated in the future to improve the safety profile of this combination. The other comment I will make on this, that MPR should be definitely considered a second generation MPT, because to give you an example, MPT is reducing the risk of progression of 37%. MPR goes up to 50%. Rate of discontinuation for MPT was around 35%. Rate of discontinuation for MPR is 15%. So generally speaking, this is already showing that there is a higher efficacy for the MPR combination versus MPT and a better safety profile for the MPR combination over MPT.
Do you have any sense in terms of the efficacy of MPR with R maintenance versus bortezomib induction, say VD with lenalidomide maintenance?
Absolutely not, because we do not have any data on this issue, so there is no evidence at present.
Any gut sense?
Well, the gut sense is that I would probably highly support this because I think, you see, with one comment coming from Europe that I still believe that melphalan, anyway, alkylating agent, might play a role in the induction regimen, I would be highly in favor of a combination including Velcade induction follow lenalidomide maintenance.
That you think it would be the same or improved?
Should be improved. Absolutely, yes.
What about the transplant situation in terms of induction? Where are you in that regard?
Well, from this point of view, here is again probably in another paradigm saying the same thing. There is at this point a great and total consensus saying Velcade induction regimen before autologous transplant, three drugs better than two drugs, autologous transplant, and lenalidomide as maintenance. So I think this paradigm could be very well translated in the elderly setting.
But with the sequential approach that you describe as opposed to combining it.
You see, generally speaking, I do think that a combo is better than a two-drug approach. This has been generally accepted. So a third drug is adding something to the two drugs. So a three-drug approach as induction is probably better than the two-drug approach. And if you ask me the question, I do prefer probably VMP over VD. Because I do believe that M might add something to D as induction. After that, I would fully support the maintenance with lenalidomide. That is now clear advantage, at least in progression-free survival.
But just to be clear, in terms of the three-drug combination, you're saying that in just the pre-transplant, not the non-transplant situation.
In the transplant situation, we do have evidence. In the non-transplant situation, we are making theoretically assumption. But unfortunately, we do not have evidence. But even in the non-transplant setting, I'm in favor of a three-drug combination, including alkylating agent, and then sequential use of len.
Let's talk about the other data sets being presented here at ASCO. What about the findings you just presented on VMPT followed by maintenance bortezomib thalidomide for the initial treatment of patients age 65 or older?
This study is important because in a large phase 3 randomized trial with more than 500 patients has been shown that the four-drug combination followed by Velcade thalidomide maintenance is superior to VMP for progression-free survival. But what is more important is that with this combination, the remission duration is going to be over 3 years. And at present, the standard three-drug combination, MPT, MPR, or MPV, they have a progression-free survival of around 2 years. So this four-drug combination followed by maintenance improved the remission duration of almost 1 year. And from this point of view, this is unprecedented and is moving the expectation of remission from a 2 years remission duration to a 3 years remission duration. And if this will be confirmed with longer follow-up, this is an unprecedented increase in remission duration of around 1 year. The second issue is coming from an English trial of 1,800 patients. And this trial found that the use of Zomita as adjuvant therapy in their large, both young and elderly randomized trial, increased the survival of 6 months independently for the treatment use for the disease. So this is again, honestly, a very large study of almost 2,000 patients. Zomita was used to reduce bone lesions and came out to increase survival of 6 months independently from the type of chemotherapy used.
Of course, this was seen, reported a couple years ago in breast cancer by the Austrians, but there, of course, that was an adjuvant situation, no bone disease. They used twice a year zoledronic acid. In a patient who you otherwise might not be using a bisphosphonate, but you maybe want to consider it based on the study you just mentioned, do you need to give the full dose of bisphosphonate?
I think so. As has been used in the English study, yes, you should give the full dose of bisphosphonate. And again, there is probably this data on the immunomodulatory effect. This is coming again from lenalidomide, but also from Zomita. The immunomodulatory effect of Zomita might play a role in increasing the survival of those patients. Zomita has been shown to increase the T-cell responsiveness and the NK activity in those patients.
Getting back to your paper on VMPT that you were talking about, it sounds like you're not ready to move forward with this outside of a trial right now?
No, certainly for me, the data, again, from a regulatory point of view, we are far away. From a scientific point of view, in my opinion, the best available standard of care is the VMPT drug, because there is at present no other free drug combination that is giving a remission duration exceeding the 3 years. So from this point of view, for someone who is asking me which is the best treatment for elderly patients, honestly, I have to say that this four-drug combination is exceeding 3 years of remission duration, and there is no other three-drug combo that is giving this kind of results. I have also to say that this is a more toxic combination, and for example, for patients over the age of 75, you start to lose the efficacy that you might see in patients between 65 and 75.
What specific toxicities?
Mainly infections, mainly hematologic toxicities that are increasing with the four drug, and never underestimated cardiologic toxicity that is coming with thalidomide in elderly patients.
What about neurologic peripheral neuropathy?
The peripheral neuropathy is slightly increasing in comparison to VMP for two reasons. First, there is a slight increase in grade 1-2 peripheral neuropathy within the 9 courses of induction in comparison to VMP. No increase in grade 3-4 peripheral neuropathy, but in the use of maintenance with VT, there is an extra 3-4 patient even having grade 3-4 peripheral neuropathy. So the expectation is that it will be some increase of peripheral neuropathy with the maintenance.
What about VMPR or lenalidomide? Do we know anything about that?
No, and I think this is a very... We were discussing this during the session. Because you know that in the evolution study, when they compare VCD versus VRD versus VCRD, basically VCD was equal to VRD and VCRD. And the issue here is, when you put together two, or at this point, three drugs with hematologic toxicity, such as VC and R, you start having too much hematologic toxicity, dose reduction, losing efficacy. In the VMPT combination, since thalidomide doesn't have any hematologic toxicity, you don't have the dose reduction that they have seen in the VCRT combination.
Anything else that happened or is happening at this meeting you want to comment on?
Well, the other only few things I would suggest, certainly the coming of other two important new drugs. One is pomalidomide that is giving a 30% response rate in patients resistant to lenalidomide. So again, a true unmet medical need. The patient without any opportunity of treatment might receive pomalidomide. The other one is carfilzomib that basically is again showing a 20% response rate in patients already resistant to both lenalidomide and bortezomib. From this point of view, again, another unmet medical need and a new drug available for patients who already use everything. And last but not least, I would mention other two drugs. One are the HDAC inhibitors, LBH and vorinostat, that they seem not really stronger than the previous, but very important in overcoming resistance. So if you have a bortezomib-resistant patient, you add the HDAC inhibitor and you can revert insensitive again. And the other one is the elotuzumab trial that showed very interesting data in terms of response rate in combination with lenalidomide.
Do we know what the efficacy of pomalidomide might be compared to lenalidomide up front? And also in terms of toxicity, same question in terms of carfilzomib and bortezomib.
My thinking is that pomalidomide is a first-generation IMID that is increasing a little bit the efficacy rate and is probably not changing the safety profile because a little bit of peripheral neuropathy is present and myelotoxicity is present. Carfilzomib, again, is a second-generation bortezomib that is increasing a little bit. I wouldn't expect a major increase in efficacy from those drugs, both pomalidomide and carfilzomib. It's increasing a little bit the efficacy, but especially in the case of carfilzomib, is lacking the peripheral neuropathy issue. So it's, again, as it was lenalidomide for thalidomide, carfilzomib is lacking the peripheral neuropathy issue in comparison to bortezomib.
I mean, have enough patients been treated that we can say that?
Well, the data now are on around 60 patients. Those studies are not huge, but certainly these studies might have some consistent data. At least, of course, we need more to say the final word, but the idea seems a slight increase in efficacy for both, but certainly a different safety profile.